On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American beach. Isn't free if you don't. Call Bob at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. 1-877-443-2366. Next, Bob Kincaid. Radio Network.
Hey, good day, night of day. It's right. It's the start. My attempts to retain my equanimity in the face of the Katrina story. And you know, there's a further development on the Katrina story. I don't know if anybody else has hit this today, but it's the one that just made the little hairs all over just start marching, from the top of my head down my arms, the back of my neck, whatever. It's the domestic spying story all over again. You probably already know what I mean. This revelation that came out last night, this videotape, I'm sure you've seen it, I've seen it, and I've got some of the audio from it for you this evening. This thing's been laying around since the day after it was done. Just like the New York Times knew about the domestic spying program back before the 2004 election, but decided the American people didn't really need to know about it. Well, guess what? It's the same thing with Katrina. This report was out there the day after the meeting went down, and our media decided that, we didn't need to know about it. Well, okay, maybe it's not quite as contentious and cantankerous as all of that. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Because two choices. One is that you've got a statist, conservatively oriented media that is afraid to point out the abject failings leader, or on the other. You've got it's a dag-gummed cotton-picking, low-down lazy that they won't even look at the videotape that FEMA gave them. Now, you pick. Whichever one you want is fine by me. But neither one of them leads to any kind of a satisfactory answer. FEMA pout tape. The day after this meeting took place, the day after Incurious George didn't ask a single question about the preparedness in the onrush of Katrina, and the media couldn't even be bothered to put it into a VCR. Is that as significant to you as it is to me? That is another, if not the final nail in the media's coffin in this country. They're dead. They're useless. If Paris Hilton isn't in the viewfinder, it doesn't happen and it doesn't matter. Right? Yeah, unfortunately, right. This is heartrending. This is looking at the American Republic coughing up blood on the front stoop. This is the abdication of any responsibility whatsoever on the part of the so-called Fourth Estate. You know, we joke from time to time about how the First Amendment contains freedom of religion, and I always remark that it contains freedom from religion, and it contains freedom of the press. Well, this one isn't funny, but I suppose the media is reading it now as containing freedom from the press. This is no great scoop. Now, apparently, I think it was Luke who called in last night and first made mention of this story. And I'm glad it's out. Okay, I'm not looking a gift horse in the mouth. But the fact of the matter is, it's been out. It's been out since September August the 30th, August the 29th. It's been laying around, and not one single one of these highly paid elite journalists, you know, the bachelor's and master's degree in journalism, toting, not one could be bothered to take the tape that was handed out at the FEMA briefing and play it. Am I overreacting? Feel free to tell me if I'm overreacting. I'm used to being betrayed by George W. Bush. Being screwed by Michael Chertoff is nothing new. Seeing the miserable, abject incompetence of the Bush administration. So what? The sun's up. The Bush administration's incompetent. They're killers. The sun goes down. They're still morons. This, however, is beginning, this trend with the media deciding when it is that we get to find out things. And I'm not talking about the difference between running it tomorrow or day after tomorrow. I'm talking about this business of the media, whether it's the New York Times or any other outfit, sitting on stuff for months and years. That bothers me a little bit more than the steady drumbeat of stupidity and pig-eyed, hateful incompetence that we get out of the Bush White House. We've come to expect that. We're used to it. We're inured to it. We're numb to it. And to a certain extent, I suppose we are with the same with the so-called liberal media. Our dear friend Joe Vecchio of cupofjoe.blogspot.com laughingly refers to them as the professional media. I don't think we should even laughingly refer to them. What can you get out of the so-called mainstream media anymore? There's no there. I'll tell you what. We're going to take a break. Then we're going to come back and listen to a little bit of the audio. Audio from a daggum tape that was handed out the day of the briefing to every major news organization in the United States, and they ignored it. Okay? I mean, that's all there is to it. So, we'll be back. You know the phone number, 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Email bob@headonradio.com. Help me out here. This is Head On, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her.
Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen?
Okay, so we've got one vote for, could you turn me down a little bit there, dear? Way hot. Thank you. We've got one vote for I'm overreacting. Our friend Rick from Panama City writes in and says, yeah, he's overreacting because we don't expect Bush to know anything. No, I don't expect Bush to know anything. I expect incompetence. I expect death and horrible misery to flow out of Bush administration actions. But what is really beginning to get under my skin and what's, you know, it makes you feel like a little bit like a paranoid is this business of the media picking and choosing how many months or how many years it's going to wait before it gives us absolutely critical information that we need in order to make determinations about the future and the health of our republic. So, I mean, that's kind of what I'm getting at on all of this. Now, with regard to, I mean, that's not all there was today. We certainly need to examine some of the sound that came out of that tape that was provided to the AP, UPI, Reuters, Agence France, CBS, ABC, NBC, Fox, CNN. All of the, they all got it. If they were there for the briefing, they got the tape and didn't bother to look at it. And it contained little gems, little nuggets. It contained, like I said, I'm beginning to wonder if we were a little rough on Brownie in the early days. We bought it when the Bush administration hung him up for the sacrificial lamb. But this is Brownie. This is Brownie predicting what's going to go on. It's right there.
My gut tells me, I told you guys, my gut was that this is a bad one and a big one. Everyone within FEMA is initially on call. This is, put it mildly, the big one, I think.
He was right. And he made the call. And Chertoff and Bush and Cheney and everyone else in the Bush administration decided that he was the convenient fall guy. He went on. He said that there were going to be problems under any circumstance. There were going to be problems. He knew, you know, do you remember us being told, who was it? Was it Chertoff? I didn't know there was anybody at the convention center. Well, Brownie knew that they were at the Superdome, and he knew that that was a recipe for a disastrous little stew.
As you may or may not know, the Superdome is about 12 feet below sea level, so I don't know what the heck. I also learned about that roof. I don't know whether that roof is designed to withstand a Cat 5 hurricane. So not to be kind of gross here, but I'm concerned about NDMS and medical and DMORT assets and their respond to a catastrophe within a catastrophe.
A catastrophe within a catastrophe. And then by the time George Bush got done with it, it was a catastrophe within a catastrophe within a catastrophe. Do we all remember when he was talking about Iraq and he described it during the campaign as a catastrophic success? I guess you can say that about his entire life, can't you? It's been a catastrophic success. Let's go to the... Never mind. The phone lines are open. 877-443-2366. I'm very much curious to get your impression of all of this. When you have a look at the articles regarding this, what else can you call it but malfeasance in office? Malfeasance, that means to do bad, doing bad in office. This is the definition, isn't it? And the National Weather Service or NOAA guy was there at the meeting, at the briefing. And he left. There was no doubt after he was done talking.
This is a Category 5 hurricane, very similar to Hurricane Andrew in the maximum intensity, but there's a big, big difference. This hurricane is much larger than Andrew ever was. Also want to make absolutely clear to everyone that the greatest potential for large loss of life is still in the coastal areas from the storm surge.
You get that? It's a prediction for disaster. He said it's like Hurricane Andrew, only it's different from Hurricane Andrew because Andrew was just such a little bitty pissant of a storm compared to what Katrina was. And you heard it. Guess what? Now, just sit back for a minute. What you're hearing, you are inside a presidential briefing. You are smack dab in the middle of a presidential briefing. Now, you have heard Michael Brown say that this is the big one. You've heard Michael Brown say that, that there's going to be a disaster at the Superdome. You've heard the National Weather Service say that this is a storm of monstrous proportions. You have heard all of these things. How do you, you're just Joe, Jane, six-pack, hanging out, listening to the radio on your computer. You get all this information. How do you react? Let's go to the phones. Mitch is with us from California. Hey, Mitch, you're head on. Good to hear from you.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Doing good.
I'm glad I finally got a chance to call on, Knicks aren't playing tonight, so I got the Knicks off. And I tell you, my Knicks are my only escape from all this,
I understand.
And they're 15-40, so they're not much of an escape.
Oh, man, you're not getting any help this year.
No, man, I'm telling you, there's no way to turn. Listen, but you were talking about the media not doing their job. I don't think they get it. I don't think the media really gets what their job is. I think they've really been trained into being entertainers. Because when the New York Times killed that story about Bush wearing the wire at the debate because it would affect the election,
yeah,
isn't something like that supposed to affect an election? The president is wearing a wire at a debate?
You would think so, sure.
Yeah, wouldn't that be like an expose? But they didn't want to bring it up because it might affect the election.
And you know what? That is so perspicacious on your part, because I'd forgotten about that. But the New York Times did a little self-critique on that very story, Mitch, because they had a NASA scientist.
Who used
the same photographic analysis that they use on Mars on George Bush's suit coat back.
They had the exact outline. You could see the wire going up over his shoulder. You could see the whole thing,
Yeah, and he was prepared to put his professional reputation on the line, and you're exactly right. A decision was made within the editorial staff at the New York Times that this wouldn't be fair to George.
But what about fair to the country?
Right.
What about fair to the nation? We found out the president was mentally retarded. Wouldn't we want to know that? You know what I'm saying? I don't understand, Bob. I just don't understand where the media is at. They just don't understand their job.
I think they do understand their job. I think they're very comfortable in their job. They like the way their job is because they don't have to work anymore. There's no danger in being Kelly Wallace, perky little blonde reporter for CNN. It's not dangerous like it was when it was Edward R. Murrow.
Well, Yeah, exactly, exactly. You know, there's no, you don't see them in foxholes anymore.
No, there's no bullets flying over over Frederica Whitfield's head like there was over Charles Kuraltz and Ed Bradley's.
I know, these guys are entertainers, man. That's all they are. They're not even good entertainers.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not even good at that. I mean, they should make up their mind what they want to do. Start a variety show on Fox, you know. You know, have a three-ring circus, and Bill O'Reilly could be the headmaster or the ring leader.
Yeah,
do something that's more apropos to their talent, you know?
Yeah, quit with all this business about what a high-blown, highfalutin civic purpose that they're upholding. When they influence elections, I mean, what would have happened to George Bush if we had heard about the domestic spying 2 weeks before the 2004 election, Mitch?
It would have killed the story because it would have affected the election.
Well, they did. They did kill the story.
They would have, I mean, yeah. If they found out that Bush shot somebody and killed them, they would have said, "Well, we'll bring this up after the election. We don't want to affect the election." I mean, I don't understand.
You know what's sad is I could care less about them journalistically affecting the election. I am much more aggrieved by the fact, Mitch, that they're unwilling to affect the country.
Well, who writes the old saying? Their job is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
Exactly. That's an old newspaper editor's.
Mark Greeley or somebody like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and they seem to have forgotten that, you know.
Well, and
their job is to put a bug under the butt of everybody that's doing something wrong.
And the sad thing is, I mean, once upon a time, that greatest of Americans, Samuel Clemens. He did a stint in journalism, so he knew from whence he spoke. He did journalism out in your neck of the woods.
Right, I know.
And he once wrote that every newspaper editor should have a pimp for a brother-in-law so that he could have someone to look up to.
That's true. There we go. You nail that one, man. Well, listen, buddy, get on with your show.
All right, thanks so much, Mitch. I've been worrying about you. I saw the Knicks standing, so I knew you couldn't be a happy camper.
Oh, no, man, I tell you, I'm 54 years old. I never broke a bone in my life. In the last 3 months, I fractured my sternum, broke a rib, and broke my ankle.
Oh, my God, I hope you're okay.
Oh, yeah, I'm fine. You know, me, I don't complain. Jeez. I'm falling apart here. I feel like Ratso Rizzo on the bus to Florida. And, you know what they do when they find out you can't walk, don't you?
Thanks so much, Mitch. You take it easy, brother.
All right, brother. Talk to you later.
All right, later.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Okay, first-time caller Gerard. Hey, Gerard, you're head on. Thanks for calling the program.
How are you?
I'm doing good. You?
Oh, not bad. I just wanted to respond a little bit to what you were saying about the media. You know, it gets to the point where, I mean, I'm just a regular working guy. I work, run a produce department in a supermarket, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I come home from work, and it's like, what kind of outrageous crap am I going to be confronted with on the news today?
Oh, I know. You know?
And, you know, I was talking to my wife earlier this morning, or this evening. I said, "You remember when we were watching the coverage on Katrina?"
Yeah.
And I said, "I mean, we're sitting there and we're watching these people, hearing about them being at the Superdome and being at the convention center, and not getting food, not getting water." I said, I turned to my wife and I said, "Those people, whether it's from negligence or." I hate to ever say that was anybody's intention, but for whatever reason, those people were sent there to die. And thank God many of them survived, but it's like hearing this, you know, and seeing this tape of Bush sitting there, stone-faced, and hearing this briefing, I just don't get it. I just don't get, you know, I think we really need to look at, you know, you got to accept the fact that the media is controlled now, at least the print media and television media.
Yeah, well, and God knows AM radio for the most part.
Yeah, and, you know, and they're going after the, broadband, you know, on the web.
Oh, yeah, they're working on the internet ghetto as hard as they can go.
You know, and it's like, you know, I see that, you know, this whole thing came out about the the wiretaps, and you know, Bush, you know, writes his little what do they call that? The, after he had already, you know, signed the bill and said, "Well, this is
The bill signing statement."
Yeah, yeah, and he said, "This is how I'm going to interpret this law."
Yeah,
I don't understand. You know, sometimes I don't understand. I've always voted Democratic. I don't understand why Democrats in the House and the Senate were ripping their desks out of the floor on the floor of the House of Representatives and just trashing the place, because that's exactly what Bush is doing.
Yeah, and that's the thing that throws me, Gerard. I don't know. I don't understand Congress at all. I don't even understand the Republicans either, for that matter, because you know, when you're a part of Congress, you are a co-equal. You're a member of a body that's co-equal to the president. And these guys running around, men and women acting like lapdogs and being enabled by the Al-Anon equivalent, the Democratic Party. You know, we've got to have unity. No, we don't need unity right now. We need guts. We need leaders. We need somebody. Yeah. We need somebody to stand up from among the sheep and decide to be a shepherd.
Yeah.
And it just astonishes me. I mean, you're in Indiana, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You've got some centrists out there.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they expect to accomplish in the center. Can you tell me?
No, I have no idea. Evan Bayh, other than looking pretty, I don't know what he's done in that Senate to further the cause of democracy. I really don't. I go to his website and I look at things and I guess he's doing something there. But you know.
But I mean, his daddy was somebody.
Yeah.
Birch Bayh was a man.
Yeah.
And but we see this across the country. It's not an isolated thing. There is a weakening and a watering down. There is an outcry in this country, don't you think, Gerard, for real leadership?
Sure. Sure, and then, you know, that's the thing. To get back to the media, if you remember during the Democratic primary, and Howard Dean's famous scream, when he got ahead, and to me, as an average person, I look at that and I say, great, you know, nobody expected him to do this well. Why not be exuberant? I'd rather vote for a man and put my trust in a man who's at least honest about his emotions.
Yeah.
Rather than just some kind of paper doll put up, you know, an image put up before us on the TV every night.
Right. This idea that...
Supposedly that was the thing that killed him. And the thing I liked about Dean from the very start is that he took it to Bush. He took it to Bush.
Yeah.
He said, this is where war is wrong. We should not be there.
Well, Gerard, that's why the Republicans took the long knives out and did Dean in. They were scared to death to run against Dean. If you're a Democrat, so at some point in time, you've got to sort of wake up and look at the clear light of reason and realize that our nominee was chosen for us by the Republican Party.
There you go.
They wanted to run. They had their campaign against John Kerry planned from the get-go because they figured that he was the DLC's guy, he was the natural, and that therefore he would be the guy who most assuredly would win the nomination. And when you began to see that Dean was bringing on the steam, they did everything in their power to destroy him, including but not limited to, and they had to have the connivance of the media to do this as well. The whole scream thing was manufactured.
Sure.
You know, because if you were, and I know I've heard people talk who were there, if you were in the back of that convention hall or that banquet room, whatever it was, if you were in the back of that thing when he did that scream, you never even knew that he did it until you went home, until the next morning and you saw it on TV. That scream was loud because it was run through a mixing board.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a direct line pool feed to the media. I mean, that has to tell you that the fix was in.
Yeah.
It blows my mind, but you know, the only power that we as people have, and you can tell me if it's otherwise, the only power we as people have is to stop enabling these people who have sold out the idea of a real media. You know, stop with the New York Times. Write your local TV station or call them or whatever. Until, you know, I'm turning it off until you stop with the missing white lady stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was listening to your show last night, and I really appreciate all the mention you've made and how you know White Rose Society has reached out to people in labor unions. I'm not in a union myself, but I have been in unions in the past. And I think as much as we need to learn about unions and how they the place they should have in the American society, I think that, well, to put it short, you know, I listen also, you know, to like Mike Malloy, and I'll never forget the thing that he said right after the Alito nomination. He said, we all got to accept the fact, you know, I'm a baby boomer, and I think it really, for a large part, falls to us. I think we need to face the fact that we've got 20 to 30 years of hard-ass work organizing ahead of us.
We absolutely do.
To countervail all this crap that's coming down from the government. It's just, I don't see any other way around it.
You know, what did Churchill say? All I can offer you is blood, sweat, toil, and tears.
There you go.
That's kind of where we are on this side, because, you know, five more years of this kind of Republican business as usual, there won't be a middle class anymore, Gerard, and nobody will be able to buy what you got in your produce section.
Right.
I mean, you're in an excellent position to see exactly what are happening to American prices right now. Look at what fuel prices are doing to the shipping costs to bring the greenery into the grocery.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we're not willing to fight, we're done.
Yeah.
But it's so good to hear from you. I hope we'll hear from you again soon. And thanks so much for listening and sharing your time with us.
Yeah, I'll certainly be showing back at you again sometime.
All right, take care, Gerard, and our very best.
All right.
Bye now. And I don't want to take a break. Let's keep rolling. Sonia is with us from La Belle France. Good evening, good morning, Sonia.
It's Surya.
Surya. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
My lovely wife got it wrong, but
that's okay. Well, the connection may not have been very good.
Okay. Thank you for calling the program.
I wrote you an email because I caught your program online. I think it was a week or 10 days ago, and I wrote you an email and said I appreciate it. So, and I happen to be up tonight, so I thought I'd just call in. I was wondering if you're going to talk about the Bush administration's apologist attitude or dealings with the mine owners there in West Virginia.
Oh, that is on the list, and there's so many things. I had an email today from a friend of ours by the name of Richard, who in the course of discussing the Dubai ports deal, Surya, asked the question. I would point out that American ownership of the Sago mine didn't make those mines any safer. You know, in talking about American ownership of the ports.
Is it 24 miners who've been killed just this year in 2006, isn't it?
I believe
died already.
Right. And the thing is, you know, you had the 13 at Sago, you had a couple at Alma, and the saddest thing is that you know, in the United States, we only the US Mine Safety and Health Administration only considers it a disaster if more than 5 people die.
Is that true?
That is honest to God's truth.
And apparently the attempt to even collect on the fines that have been imposed haven't even been followed up by the Treasury Department. They just lapsed.
There is a coal operator in Kentucky who I believe is $1.5 million in the hole to MSHA fines, and he is mining coal as we speak.
I tell you, you know, it's worse than China or Eastern Europe. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Well, unbelievable. The Chinese.
I heard that the safety measure. What is it with? They're supposed to have text messaging possibilities in the underground. Is that right?
Right.
They can, And this was implemented in Australia and other civilized nations 20 years ago.
That's correct. They use it in China.
Unbelievable.
It is.
What is happening to that? I live over here. I've lived over here for a number of years. I have dual nationality, etc. But I tell you, I weep for what I see that nation becoming. You know, the nation where I grew up.
So much of it is a matter of American political indifference and American...
Like you were saying with your previous caller, yeah, what's it going to take for people to get out there, wake up, get active, get...
Well, you know, it blew my mind a year or so ago, Surya. We had I read a story, I think from AP or something, maybe it was AFP, about the fact that judges in France went on strike.
Well, yeah, going to the streets here in France is a time-honored tradition.
Well, and I don't think it's because the average French life is somehow more boring than ours. I think there's...
No, but in a way, I mean, there's a... How can I... You know, they learned... it was an interesting exchange. I mean, the American Revolution was based on French philosophic principles,
yes.
And then the French borrowed it back again. And in a way, they've improved on it. I mean, the French situation is completely different from the American, but they have no compunction about going to the streets and forcing the government's hand to listen to them.
But you see that I don't think even through the long, somewhat militant history of American labor, in large part we've never developed that attitude on a grand scale because
That's
every
true. It's always been localized. That's
right. Every
true.
Time somebody comes out, every time somebody goes on strike, you can bet your last dollar that the government will bring in the National Guard or something like that to oppose
and scabs
and the scabs to oppose the people who are standing up for their own rights.
Yeah, and you see here the French government will do that. Okay, they may be up in their ivory towers, but they won't interfere that way.
Well, they understand that they're not in business with business, and
that's right.
And our federal government doesn't understand that.
Yeah.
You know, you go all the way back to Calvin Coolidge declaring that the business of America is business, and you know that is that's a wildly freighted phrase, but it's absolutely the truth when it comes to American governmental attitude toward working people. The transport
and never
work,
so true as now.
No.
I mean, it's just a total sellout.
Look at what the government did to the transport workers in New York City when they went on strike. They told working human beings that they did not have the right to withhold their labor.
Yeah.
Last I checked, that's
okay,
slavery.
I can tell you that like, here in France there is a debate about that because when there are strikes in the public sector, it you know, discommodes everybody and there are a lot of people really do get fed up with it. But then on the other hand, there is a current in the French body politic where people understand, you know, if people go to the streets to strike, there is some reason for it. There must be some, even the people that are being the most discommoded, the commuters, the
airline passengers, train passengers,
workers who have to stand out there in the cold and rain waiting for their train, you know.
Yeah. But they understand that there's
it.
Something underlying,
and there is solidarity, what they call la solidarité, they believe in this, you know, and this is what's been lost in the States, you know, the solidarity with the worker who makes that country run.
Well, and exactly, and it's not just that it's been lost; it has been criminalized.
Yeah, yeah.
If one union goes out, another union made the
workers swallow it themselves. That's what's so amazing.
It's
pathetic. They swallowed it hook, line, and sinker. Those damn union men are just sitting around in the smoke back rooms, the smoke filled back rooms.
It's a travesty
compared to what the labor movement was. pre-World War II. It's really a sad state of affairs.
Well, and actually, the highest rate of union membership in U.S. history was during the Eisenhower administration.
I was going to say in the 50s, yeah.
And that was also
tour, yeah.
Up until Clinton came along. That was the highest. That was the era of the greatest American productivity as well. And there's a reason for that. And now union membership is down to around 11-12% nationally.
Yeah, I know. Disaster, but I mean, is there any sign that it may, you know, that people are getting wise that collective bargaining is the only way? One for all and all for one. I mean, I don't see how they can. I don't understand.
Well, I hope that you'll see some of this come out of the Sago disaster, because. Otherwise,
well, I mean,
it's going to happen again and again and again.
Are West Virginians up in arms?
We were upset for a couple of days, but you know, we've been members of a slave economy for 150 years now. We're kind of used to it.
Take it in the shorts and take it some more, you know.
Well, you know, a dog that lays on
and
the ground gets kicked.
Hope you're not one of the ones who gets laid off. You know, just hoping against hope. It's like
And don't you dare.
Hope it's not me.
Yeah, don't turn in a safety violation if you're in a non-union hole, because you will lose your job.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So overall, I maintain hope. And, you know, this show is sponsored by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights.
Absolutely. I was surprised to learn that. That's what Agnes was telling me while we were waiting.
And it's is inspiring.
Yeah.
That says there's hope.
That's great. And long may it last.
And, the great thing is they understand how important it is that we get this dialogue going.
Yeah.
Because
between the working public and the people who would support them if they were only given a chance.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so good to hear from you this evening. I hope we'll continue to hear from you via email, via telephone.
I'll do my best. Well, I just realized today that my ISP supplier has kicked my. I have what's called a forfait. I can call, you know, internationally now for 24/7 for a fixed price. So
oh, wonderful!
I can do it more often.
Oh, I hope you will. I love your perspective, and frankly, if you could help people understand that, you know, America's not in a test tube. We're not in a vacuum. That there are people the world over who know how to stand up.
Unfortunately, speaking from a French perspective, it doesn't carry much weight with a lot of Americans. So there you are.
Well, I don't tolerate that kind of stuff on this program. We know our history around here.
Yeah, well,
we know what we owe to the French.
If they only knew. I mean, you know, Americans and the French are so tied together. If they, you know, if Americans only could understand that, and Americans, I mean, and the French, you know, aside from their disgust with the Bush disaster, they love Americans, and they love the, you know, most of them. I mean, they understand also. They understand the historical links, and
Yeah. And as a, you know, it was for
we owe our revolutionary principles to them.
Yes, we do. Jefferson, you know, it was born straight out of Rousseau and the Enlightenment.
Yeah.
Sure,
absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Surya.
Yeah, good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you
we'll
too.
Talk to you.
Take
okay.
care. Bye now.
Bye. Thanks.
Okay, let's. Man, this is exciting. This is a dialogue that I don't think is going on anywhere else in talk radio. I'm not tooting my own trumpet, but it is not going on in other places. And I think, you know, keep your fingers crossed. We could begin to change things. It's that word coming back again, that old Serbian word for emboldened that Wayne talks about. Let's go to Jeff on line one. Hey, Jeff, you're head on. Thanks for waiting.
No problem. I was really calling about last night's show. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to call in, but it was a great show. And one of the things I was hoping you might be able to do for me.
Okay.
Coal River Mountain Watch.
Yes.
Their website doesn't post their schedule for too far in advance. So if you get the information from them as far as when they're going to be up here in the Pittsburgh area, I'd really like to know.
I will do that, and Judy made us a promise that she would let us know. I think it's not too far in the distant future, I don't believe.
Well, they only had a few dates up on the website, so And I just wanted to check with you.
And if you'll, yeah, if you will keep an eye on it, they do update it, but they just don't go too far into the future because they're spread kind of thin.
Yeah, and one of the other things I wanted to call about tonight is I don't know if you've heard about the situation with the voting machines up here.
I've heard some about it. A caller to All Things Reconsidered was talking about it this past weekend.
Yeah, well, we sued the Westmoreland County Commissioners for to oppose the choice of voting machines that they made.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it was based on the fact that, local legislation requires that there be a referendum on any change in the voting system.
Well, isn't there also a Pennsylvania constitutional provision providing for paper ballots? I mean, that was my understanding. I could be wrong.
I don't remember offhand, but definitely the legal basis we were fighting it on was that a referendum was required. And they're complaining that they can't vote on the referendum. Now, we've been going to the local Board of Elections for the last 2 years, trying to give them any and every bit of information that we can on these machines from truly independent and qualified people, you know, that are showing all the potentials for failures on these machines. And they just didn't want to hear it. We went to the commissioners' meeting, and they basically listened to what we had to say and just voted the way they would have voted anyway.
Well, $11 million will make a politician pretty doggone deaf. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's big. That's one of their biggest complaints. They don't want to lose the grant money for these machines. And it's like, what are you losing if you're losing money for something that's going to be worthless?
Well, did you see the news coming out of New Mexico today?
Not that I recall.
New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson, who is a Democrat.
Yeah. Oh, that was a great letter.
Has issued a letter calling for a return of the right to vote on paper ballots to all New Mexicans. Now, the problem was it kind of got a stick stuck in the spokes before it got out of the gates because part of and I don't fully understand it all, but part of the process involves being able to pay off the damn dirty machines that they've got in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And the legislature the failed to fund that buyout.
Jeez.
But you know, when Bill Richardson, you know, I don't see him as one of those screaming liberals or, you know, tinfoil hat types. That can't be underestimated for its value in mainstreaming the issue.
Well, I think Bill Richardson's a pretty good guy, and I think he wants to be sure that if he wins an election, he wins it honestly.
I think that is part and parcel of it, and there are some that say that he's trying to look a little presidential. And you know what? If he thinks that makes him presidential, I agree.
Yeah. Well, the other situation I've got to deal with here, I've got to jump out for a conference call. We're getting sued by our friends in Washington.
Yeah, well, see, that was the next thing, Jeff. I was wondering where the DOJ lawsuit, has it gone down?
They were in court on Tuesday, but I wasn't able to make it. No, not Tuesday, Wednesday.
Well, you know, I read that article in the Post-Gazette last week. And I got to thinking, frankly, that puts you, whether you realize it or not, that kind of puts you guys in the catbird seat.
I hope so.
Because that puts the burden of proof on the DOJ to countermand Westmoreland County's legal requirements, as well as declare unconstitutional in the face of the United States Constitution, not the HAVA Act. Because if I understand my constitutional law correctly, a congressional statute like HAVA cannot trump a constitutional issue in a state constitution.
Well, not to mention that, but you know, the entire HAVA Act was a knee-jerk reaction to a problem that didn't exist.
Well, that's exactly right. And am I mistaken, or was one of the primary authors of HAVA Bob May?
Yeah.
He was?
Yep.
Shouldn't that be cause alone for revisiting HAVA? I mean, in light of the fact that Bob Ney is up to his dirty neck.
Well, I'd look at it, but yeah. You know, and again, I guess I have some scruples that haven't been run down the drain yet.
Well, the fact is, you know, he's an Ohio congressman. Diebold is in Ohio. I think there's just too many connectable dots there not to think that there might have been some political skullduggery involved in the creation of that act.
I would say so, because, like I said, you know, it's a knee-jerk reaction legislation. It really doesn't address the basics of the problem.
In many ways, it's HAVA came before the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
And it was the same legislative process in both instances. That was something that nobody read, that everybody just said, well, you know, America needs this, and, you know, the next thing you know, you're not getting to vote anymore. You're playing Pac-Man for 2 minutes in a booth.
Yeah, well, definitely going to miss the old lever machines, but I'd rather vote on paper anyway.
Well, I kind of feel the same way. It's a little bit harder to cheat. Well, I'll let you get on to your conference call. Please keep us up to date, Jeff.
Absolutely.
All right, take care. Bye now. Let's see. Yeah, let's go ahead and take our top of the hour break. And when we come back, your phone calls. There's a couple of lines open if you want to jump in. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
In the deep dark hills of eastern Kentucky, that's the place where I traced my bloodline, and it's there I read on a hillside gravestone, you'll never leave Harlan alive. Oh, my
thievery.
Yes.
Just want to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right?
Yes.
He died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones were stolen. Apparently, there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently, now he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, I just thought it was so...
oh my God.
I thought it was so ghoulish.
It just freaks me out. Anyway... Hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Tom DeLay, indicted for criminal money laundering, pocketed tens of thousands in campaign contributions from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff, 48 trips to golf resorts, 100 flights aboard company jets, 200 nights at world-class resorts and hotels, $1 million from Russian tycoons to allegedly influence his vote. $1 million from Russian tycoons? What else will we uncover about Tom DeLay? It's time for DeLay to resign.
Back to you.
you to grab the trigger, but you don't have to pull it back, 'cause you know it won't bring it back to me, back to me.
Your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Everybody ready for hour number two? I know I am. A couple of lines open. 877, the number four, head on. 877-443-2366. I am meek, mild-mannered, talk radio dude, Bob Kincaid.
And I do have so much fun when I get a chance to talk to America. Every blessed night. Thanks, guys, all of you, so much. Let's do go straight to the phones. Gene is with us from Oregon. Hey, Gene, you're head on.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
Oh, not bad. Most everybody else has all stolen my thunder except what I was calling about was the because I think you were overreacting because the journalists decided to sit on these stories, and I was going to say no. Actually, while you all were talking about this, I was thinking, well, maybe we should start instead of, of course, write the advertiser that advertises advertising the big papers like the New York Times, that kind of thing, but and ask them not to advertise there anymore. But I was thinking maybe instead of doing that or just that, maybe we should start thinking about finding a smaller, more or less well-known paper, kind of getting local advertisers kind of boosting their products.
Well, you know, I think you've got a great idea, and it applies in print, and it applies in the other media as well, Gene. One of the things that was being talked about last night was the departure of Air America from the Phoenix, Arizona market.
Yeah,
and there were a lot of people who were outraged, and frankly, I am too. But the fact of the matter is, I can almost predict with almost mathematical certainty some of what went down there, because the right wing is radical, the right wing is hateful, and the right wing is above all organized, because they've got those authoritarian predilections, and if somebody says goose step, they honk.
Yeah.
And so what happens, like I said, I can almost guarantee that this was part of the process, is that right-wingers started calling anyone who advertised on this particular AM station in Phoenix, and what they said is, I ain't never going to buy no lounge chair from you as long as you are advertising with that communist radio Air America.
Yeah.
I know they did it because it's been done to me.
I'm sure.
And so the people on the left, progressives, liberal people, you know, decent people, for heaven's sake, have got to understand that if somebody is spending their advertising dollars with somebody like an Air America or an independent like me, or coming soon, our buddy Guy James down in Florida, All Things Reconsidered, Fourth Estate Radio, anybody who is supporting liberal radio must in turn be supported by liberals. And that includes, you know, if you're going to buy a car from whoever's advertising on the Air America affiliate. If you got to go get a lounge chair, buy it from the furniture store that's advertising on Air America. That kind of thing. We've got to get proactive in our responses to marketing. Because
yeah.
The other side already is, and they are whipping our butts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and people have talked about boycotts, and a lot of other people have said, well, that's not such a great idea. But what are you going to do unless you kind of have to do your kind of independent economy here?
Well, exactly. And boycotts are hard to maintain. A businessman is terrified of a boycott, of course, because he can't be sure that the person threatening it can't follow through on it. But I think it's a much more positive aspect, instead of something like a boycott, to go in and say to somebody, look, I recognize that you're advertising with somebody that believes in freedom.
Yeah.
And therefore, when I've got trade to give, I'm giving it to you.
Yeah, I think that we really ought to have to do that, and that's pretty much what I was going to bring up. The only other thing when you were talking with the French lady about the mining stuff, I thought I saw something about the Bush administration is going to reduce the penalties for mine wells.
It's just ridiculous, Gene. We can barely get the Bush administration to enforce the fines. As the lady said a couple of weeks ago at the hearings before the Democrats who were willing to listen to them, there were no Republicans in the room.
Oh, yeah.
She pointed out that Janet Jackson's naked breast for 1/10 of a second drew a heavier federal fine than all the dead people from either Sago or Jim Walker number one and all of those safety violations put together.
Yeah.
That should speak volumes to us.
Yeah. Well, that was about all I had to say.
Well, thank you, Gene. Everything going well?
Oh, okay. I got the paperwork done on the new apartment, so I'm hoping that I'll be in there by the first of next month.
Well, that's wonderful. Let us know how the new housewarming comes out.
Okay.
All right. Take care, Gene.
Thanks.
Bye now.
Bye.
And onward and upward to our buddy Fritz in New Mexico. Hey, Fritz, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
Going pretty good.
Good. Yeah, Monson, nice calling. I wanted to assure your woman friend from France, Sorry, was her name?
Surya.
Surya, that I take very seriously the opinions. I personally take very seriously the opinions of my European brethren and what they think of this society. Because I'm ashamed of this society, you know. I just think that, you know, we're so narcissistic and so unable to sense what the rest of the world thinks of us that, you know, it's one of our biggest problems.
Well,
I hope she's still listening.
Oh, I'm sure she is. But, you know, you got to admit, Fritz, that in the long run, she's probably at least a little bit correct because there's been so much negative propaganda put out.
Oh yeah, I mean all this, especially the anti-France propaganda.
Oh yeah, well, and most people don't realize, Fritz, how far it goes back. I remember Sam Kinison making France jokes, and I used to love Sam Kinison. When Reagan bombed that tent city and killed Gaddafi's little baby girl.
Yeah.
I remember Sam Kinison making a joke, saying, "Well, you know, maybe we would have had a, you know, because what we bombed the French embassy while we were at it in Libya."
Yeah, I do remember that, Bob. Yeah, it goes way back.
Yeah,
and it's unfortunate.
And it is once again bigotry that is generated by the Republican right.
It's just that same racism. You know, it's racism, Europeanism, anti-Francism. You know, whatever it is, it's always some group worthy of denigration.
Yeah, and the thing
and
is,
that's, and that's the way they pump up their own self-image, Bob. You know what it is psychologically? It's lack of self-esteem. I got to criticize somebody else to pump myself up.
Yeah, well, and it's probably got some really twisted Freudian component. You're absolutely right, Fritz.
Yeah,
but the fact of the matter is, they've got it together. I mean, yeah, they get inconvenienced by a labor stoppage every now and then, but we're also dealing with people, Fritz, who, you know, get 6 weeks of paid vacation a year or 5 weeks.
Oh yeah, I mean,
and that's from
comparison. We're the primitive, archaic ones. You know, our society is in the Stone Age by comparison to some of those European societies, and we are a teenage society. They are so much more mature. We need to learn from it, but we refuse because we know who's in power.
Well,
speaking of which, I wanted to comment on the whole New Mexico voting thing.
Yes, please. I was kind of hoping we'd hear from you.
You know, it's one of the reasons I think that the government put this forth is that the case that I wrote you a couple of emails on a couple of months ago, Lopategui versus the Secretary of State of New Mexico, is still pending. In fact, the judge essentially told the plaintiffs. That they could now go out and seek and depose further witnesses and seek further evidence that the Secretary of State's plan to buy these idiotic Saratoga voting machines was ludicrous. And so as long as that's pending, the plaintiffs are in the strong position.
Yes.
And I think the governor's response, you know, God bless him for making it, is part of that.
Well, but is it not true that for all the I think Richardson's response was correct, Fritz, and I get the sense.
Absolutely. I'm not complaining about his response.
But they did sort of sabotage the legislature did sort of sabotage that, did they not, by failing to fund the buyout of the old debt for the old machines.
Right. Yeah, it was $11 million that he requested.
And they
and
refused.
So, you know, I think, you know, it remains to be seen what's going to happen. I really.
Well, you know what amazes me, and I'm just kind of being a geek here and thinking back to my days in the study carols of the law school, because there's nothing real world about this. But I, you know, given the troubles that have been had with Diebold machines, you know, you talk about generating that $11 million to buy it back. Why didn't somebody really sort of get a pair of stones out there and file a lawsuit against the company for the machine's failures and a breach of warranty and cancel the daggum debt and make them eat the $11 million?
That's a damn good point, Bob. A damn good point.
Because I don't know about New Mexico, but a lot of states recognize an implied warranty of fitness for a particular purpose. And, you know, if a voting machine can't count votes, it's failing that implied warranty, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, I'm hoping that maybe the stones out of this particular group of voter action, you know, that maybe it'll come from there depending on what the judge rules in this case. I mean, maybe that's the next step, but that's an excellent point.
Well, I, you know, mentioned it to somebody along the way. I just, I think there's, we get into these mindsets like, well, talking to Jeff a few minutes ago up in Western PA, there's a lot of people in Western PA that are upset that the DOJ is going to come down and sue them. Well, you know, that's fine. The burden of proof is on the Department of Justice. And they're, if I understand the scenario correctly, they're going to have to prove a boatload of stuff. And it's not going to be a cakewalk.
You mean the DOJ is?
Yeah, the DOJ, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're gonna have to prove that that the Help America Vote Act supersedes statewide voting and possibly constitutional issues. Because, you know, the one man, one vote thing that Bill Richardson referenced is every bit as viable an argument inside the Pennsylvania case as well.
Oh, no, absolutely. Considering the depositions that have been already attained by the voter action group and the evidence against these machines, there's a very, very, very good case against the companies, you know, that these machines are useless.
And
so I hope we go that way. I really do.
Well, I do, too. Please keep us posted on it.
I will. Speaking of stones, one more thing. Did you see the list of 10 that voted against the Patriot Act in the Senate?
I've been so up to my eyeballs in trying to sort out tech issues that I've been kind of behind the curve. Do you happen to have them, Fred?
Yeah, I do. True Majority sent it around, and I was surprised by two of them. One, my own Senator Jeff Bingaman actually voted against it.
Wow.
And good old Daniel Akaka, who voted for, what's his name?
Alito, yeah.
Alito got some stones and voted against the Patriot Act. The others are expected. Leahy, Feingold, Patty Murray, Harkin. Well, Harkins, of course, Robert Byrd, the constitutionalist, but he couldn't vote against Alito.
Yeah, see, that,
Patriot Act.
That, I knew Byrd was going to be on that list, Fritz,
and it
breaks my daggum heart.
Doesn't it?
Because the fact of the matter is, you know, he's playing a card right now. Oh, I'm standing up for your freedom. You know,
the whole election thing.
That, yeah, it's a bunch of hooey that he voted against the Patriot Act, because the fact of the matter is, if they had mustered a whole bunch of people to stop it and someone had sued, he put the guy on the bench who could overturn it.
Absolutely.
And would overturn it.
Absolutely. You know, and what this strikes me as is that, you know, as much as I think Harry Byrd is a nice guy, and he's well-intentioned, he's not the guy with the backbone to organize, you know, organize Democrats in the Senate, you know, to do unified action. We're not seeing any unified action here.
No, and we're not seeing anything. And again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier. I don't know where the leader comes from, but he or she is going to have to rise up from somewhere, because that person is not anywhere on the political horizon in the United States whatsoever.
Unfortunately, so, Bob. You know, I don't know where that person's going to come from, but that's what is needed, certainly.
Well, I tell you what, it's we've got to keep an eye out for him, and when we think we see him
or her,
or yeah, that's what I said, kind of I mean, you know, I'm a redneck, I'm a southerner, I was trying to be genderless, but wherever that person arises, we have got to keep an eye on that horizon and bolster them and help them and give them our support and get their backs and let them understand that we're not going to let them get swift boated.
Yeah, I just hope that person materializes in my lifetime, Bob. I'm telling you, I'm getting real worried about that.
I know. It's that whole in my lifetime thing.
It really is. I mean, I'm getting there. I'm in my 50s now, so.
And it did, yeah. And every day you wonder a little bit more.
Yeah, it is.
But,
unfortunately, so.
But you know, you.
Well, thank you, my brother.
Oh, absolutely, Fritz. Thank you so much, and make sure you got Bill Richardson back on this one.
Yeah, we're definitely going to try.
All right, you take care, Fritz.
You too, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye bye.
20 minutes past the hour. Let's keep it rolling. Rick is with us from Panama City, Florida. Hey, Rick, you're head on. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing all right, Bob. I'm going to try to retain a level of decorum, as I was telling Agnes.
Now, why would you want to go and do something like that?
Well, after last night. But I mean, you know, just a couple of things. Not, you know, this is just a little side thing. You know, I need you to be a slave to that hot clock, because I know that. I mean, with all the new callers and the way this show is expanding, you're about to be picked up. I'm certain of it. And so I need you to be a slave to that hot clock and just get yourself some kind of out cue sound. that Agnes can use to just drop you.
Yeah.
And go to network as soon as it happens. And just if you screw up and you're still talking, it just drops the calls, drops you. We work it out after. We're offline. We work it out. But at least you're in time for the commercial.
All right.
All right.
Yeah. Thanks.
Anyway, have you ever noticed how it is about quorum calls that the only time they're necessary is when they're talking, and this is in the Senate. The only time they're necessary is when they're talking about citizens' rights.
Yeah, it does seem to work that way, doesn't it?
When money's involved, you never hear one called. Well, I noticed that today.
Well, that's because there's always a quorum when there's money in play.
Isn't that something?
I mean, the Democrats and Republicans alike, they're drawn to money like, well, you know what they say, a dog returns to.
Yes, yes. I mean, it had never struck me so vividly as it did today. Perhaps it's the Mets. I don't know it. But I was watching C-SPAN for like 12 hours, and just to keep up with these guys, and I focused on the Senate because the Congress is a waste of time anyway. It's a joke.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was just amazing to watch how when they were talking about our rights and the direction of the nation and where we're going, there was a constant quorum call.
Oh, yeah, you can hear the echo in the chamber.
Yes, but when it came time to talk about money for people with heating bills that can't afford to pay them, not one. Everybody was there to try to delete that action. Everybody was pulled in. Not one call for a quorum call, but then guess what? It actually passed. And why did that happen? Even Senator Coleman was crying the blues. Everybody had a chance to play good cop, bad cop today and throw the citizenry a bone. It was something to watch.
Well, you know, our buddy David in Nashville coined a phrase on this program a long time ago, Rick, and this may be one of those moments for using it. And what he says is, it's all wrestling.
It is all wrestling, but it's worse than that. It's sin.
Yeah.
Absolute pitiful sin.
You know, the winners and the losers go back into the green room after the big wrestling match is over, and they pass around the bottle of hooch and slap each other on the back. Boy, we sure put one over on them today, didn't we,
Bill? You know, this is not even in my list, but I'll add it anyway. I mean, I remember when I was 15 years old, I got a hold of a copy of The Divine Comedy by Dante.
Mm-hmm.
Dante's Inferno there.
Yeah.
And it's just, I read it and I said, this is stupid. This is terrible. I hated religion and everything at that time. I wasn't a Christian. I am a Christian. But the thing of it was is that I thought it was so stupid. And then later in life, after I got involved in adulthood, much, much later in politics and everything, I finally understood why those guys were upside down in that vat of, fertilizer.
Yeah. I heard the wheels turning.
Yeah. I had to find the right word. But, I mean, it all of a sudden made sense to me because of the things that they do. And sometimes I wonder if any of the proletariat ever does go to hell. Maybe it's just lined with the leaders and the kings. And to your lady that called, I think she was from France.
Yes.
She was the lady that discussing our labor issues?
Yes.
Yes. Fine lady. And thank you for calling, ma'am. Mademoiselle, I don't know if I should say mademoiselle because I don't know if that's the proper thing, so I'll just say ma'am.
Okay.
You're absolutely right, and what's happened with labor, and you can take it all the way back to when they fired the air traffic controllers, but here's some antiquated terms we don't hear anymore that used to be part of our lexicon. You don't hear apprentice, and you don't hear journeyman.
No.
You don't hear that, and that ties back to a commercial they used to have on television in this once great country, where it was all about, it wasn't even a commercial, it was a public service announcement, a PSA, that was about signing our work. You would be, remember that one?
Yeah.
About how we'd be proud to sign our work. They had this guy with the furniture, the guy
right.
with the fender and all that kind of stuff. And we were proud to sign our work back then. And that's when you had apprentices and journeymen.
Well, you know, the
unions made
that
they're
still, problem. But they're still out there, Rick. They really are. Back in the previous incarnation of this program, and I sincerely hope it's going to happen again in the future, we were proud to have as sponsors the West Virginia Pipefitters Association.
I hope they join you again.
And
I really do.
They had a phone number. They said, if you are interested in employment opportunities, please call us, because all of the carpenters and millwrights, the pipefitters, the sheet metal workers, they've all got brilliant apprenticeship programs.
Well, then we got to do something to get that out there, because there's too many of our greatest. These young guys, they get into trouble on the streets, that can't, or work their backs to the bone, you know, flipping burgers. They don't know about this.
Well, another thing,
another alternative besides going to Iraq.
Well, yeah, speaking of Iraq, another thing that's gone down here in West Virginia, a lot of our labor organizations have engaged in a program that was of their own creation that they called Helmets to Hard Hats. And they have invited and solicited and set up programs to take Iraq veterans coming home and bring them into the apprenticeship programs.
Well, that's a beautiful thing. That is a beautiful thing. But the problem with that is that's like a double dip. That's a double dip. Because here's what they promise these soldiers, and I have had two kids that have gone, okay? Their units have been in Iraq. And the fact of the matter is nobody gets their college money.
No, that's a con.
That is an absolute con. If they promise you that they're going to pay off your college loans, forget it. It's not true. If they promise you that they're going to turn around and put you into school, it's a con unless you lose a limb. Then you might have a chance. If you start going through the big hospitals, then and you've lost some major part of your body, it's a good chance you might get selected, but you're going to be at the back of a long line.
Right.
I'm happy. My kid lost nothing. He had to come. Well, the oldest, he's a mill. But Christopher had to come home due to a hardship because of me, and I got him out of there. And boy, he ain't even tried to go back. They tried to take him back, but he hasn't gone back.
Well, Papa Rick didn't raise no dummy.
Well, he's my stepson, but yes, you know, it's just that. I just told them, don't do it, don't do it. And they had fatalities in that unit. It was very hard for him to stay. Now, the other boy's in the Navy, and he's on a submarine, and he runs sonar. And so he hasn't seen actual action.
Mm-hmm.
But he's in a submarine that is guaranteed, I can't tell you anymore, they'd have to kill me.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So anyway, the point of the matter is that we need to get those apprenticeships up. We need to start talking about them. We need to start talking about journeymen again, and start talking about pride in American work without apology for pride.
Absolutely, and you know, this isn't. I'm sorry. I enjoy our conversations, and I tend to throw the clock to the wind. So forgive me. But the fact of the matter is, part of the reason I love my conversations with you is that you know, we're guilty of a little inside baseball. But part of the thing that we're trying to do, and that I hope that the action of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights has done, is to show organized labor that there is a third way.
Exactly.
And what we are doing here is we are inventing that third way. Yeah, I rail and I rage and I raise a little cane and I might get under somebody's skin once in a while. But the fact of the matter, at the end of the day, Rick, I am one of the few people nationally that is talking about what is right with being a worker in America and having decent wages, an opportunity for health care, and a meaningful retirement that doesn't involve little Friskies and saltines.
Exactly, and there's nothing wrong with that, despite your critics. Don't even worry about those people, because they don't understand. I think it was Jesus himself, forgive them, Father, they do not know what they do.
I mean,
they don't know what they're doing. They bought into an ideology that they're selling out their nation. They don't even understand it, because they're wrapped up in party instead of wrapped up in being an American. And
yep.
The only way we're ever going to reach them is just keep preaching the truth. One last thing, unemployment numbers by Jeff Sessions on the Senate floor today, 3.4% in Alabama. Mr. Sessions is a lying, evil man.
Yes, he is.
And what they do with unemployment numbers today, you've all heard it, those that listen to Bob, but for all the new people that come along, in case you haven't, is that they only count the people that have filed for unemployment. And everyone who drops off is no longer counted.
Right.
And this man lied on the Senate floor today. He's an embarrassment and a shame to his state.
Well, and it started with Reagan, and they started including the military in the unemployment numbers to fudge them up and gin them up a little bit.
I am
getting the dirtiest look in the world from Agnes right now,
thank
Rick.
Thank God. I'll see you both later, and thanks for being there, and welcome all you new callers and you older ones that haven't been around for a while. This show is going places. Bob, keep going. Be a slave to that hot clock. I love you.
Take care, Rick.
See ya.
Bye now. Skillet, Iron Skillet, is armed and ready for deployment. We're out of here. We'll be back. Time for Cup of Joe. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Atrios and Daily Coast are two of the big players on the scene right now in what is known as the blogosphere, and my guess is that there are about a dozen sites that probably draw an overwhelming majority of readers. 5 years ago, it was wide open. Now it seems to have become more centralized. It's much more difficult for a blogger starting today to get any kind of traction unless they can get the attention of one of the bigger blogs, and God forbid anyone should get on their bad side or be accused of blog whoring. So my question is, where do we go from here? We have huge numbers of people gathering at these sites, but except for a few excellent examples of fundraising and otherwise helping candidates, it all seems to be one big circle jerk. There are too many clicks, too many people more concerned with their own pet issues or egos to see any kind of a big picture. If we want to become the kind of political force many of us would like us to become, then we can't continue doing what we're doing. And so we stand at a crossroads, and I don't know where we're going. 5 years ago, I don't think anyone even used the word blogosphere. Will it even exist 5 years from now? We've got a tremendous tool at our disposal, and I get the impression that we've only scratched the surface of its potential, not just in terms of making a quick buck, but in bringing the world together, by showing the things we all have in common as humans, not just as Americans or Germans or Iraqis. Maybe it's time we started acting towards that. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
So if you believe in that God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll supposedly say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world, or is that real world? I mean, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? And why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have, you know, all of this injustice in society? And why are African Americans killed at three times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have. Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Jump,
25 minutes and change before the hour. What a wonderful, wonderful conversation we're having this evening. Let's keep it going. Bob is joining us from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, you're head on. You there, Bob?
From North Dakota.
From North Dakota. You know, it's west by God, Virginia. Is it north by God, Dakota, too?
No.
Oh, darn.
It doesn't have anything to do with God.
Okay.
It has everything to do with who draws the lines.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. 5440 or bust?
No. Who draws the lines? You know, what made this North Dakota? I mean, you got to split the state down the middle and, you know, take half of South Dakota and half of North Dakota and you call it, you know, I don't
call it West Dakota.
Huh?
West Dakota and East Dakota.
Yeah, well, that'll work. Yeah, it would work real well. Because when you're talking about ripping the earth to take coal, what are you talking about? Huh?
No. What are you talking about?
Last night I listened to some real people. You know, the ones from your West Virginia country.
Yeah.
Yeah? And they said, oh, my God, I wept, Bob, because I know the Battle of Blair Mountain.
Right.
I know that. No, it is not.
Well, you know, what our friend Surya was talking about when she called in earlier this evening, when workers stand up on their hind legs in France or Germany or Italy, stuff stops happening. When workers stand up on their hind legs in the United States of America, Billy Mitchell flies in with his brand spanking new Air Force to try the first experiment in aerial bombardment.
Absolutely. And they used it on what?
Working people.
They used it on average Americans.
Yeah.
People that work for a living to feed their family. Yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
No, they're not using, Billy Mitchell and his newfangled Air Force now. They're using other tactics. They're using Walmart, and Walmart moves into your city, puts up a superstore. Next thing you know, no downtown.
Right.
No more, I know mom and pop who have spent their fortune, their life, building a community.
Yeah.
It's something else.
Well, we're going to get to watch that about 10 miles from where I live here in just a matter of months, Bob.
No.
Yeah, there's a Walmart superstore coming in, literally built on top of the site of the Battle of Fayetteville, where indirect artillery firing was invented. I'm not kidding. I mean, you know your military history. Indirect firing by artillery pieces was invented at the Battle of Fayetteville, and the grounds where that battle was fought now has a Lowe's and a Walmart on it. And they built on top of the Confederate dead. And there's a little Ben Franklin five and dime that's going to get killed, and there's a wonderful little grocery store that's going to go down. They still grind their own meat and make their own sausage and stuff, and if you go in and you say, I want a two-inch thick ribeye, by God, they will cut you one, and that's going to all be gone, Bob.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Well, because Walmart came into the city fathers and they said, well, Walmart brings jobs, and then the city fathers said, you know, we're going to get some tax revenue out. You know, it's the whole sad, sorry lie that Walmart brings every time they come to your town. You know the drill.
No.
Well, they drill. Well, yeah, they tell you what the how they're going to improve.
I've got the movie, Bob.
Yeah. Okay, you got the movie. Then you know exactly what's going on.
Killing us.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there are unionized grocery workers at a Kroger, probably not 1.5 miles from where this Walmart's going in. Their goal, Walmart's sole goal is to bust at Kroger's and take those union workers who still have some benefits and make sure that they come to work at Walmart for $7 an hour and can't afford health care on a dare.
You got a 308, Bob?
308? No, I don't.
Get one. It's called an M14. We used them back in boot camp back in 1966.
I got me a 300 Winchester mag bolt action, but yeah.
That'll do. Yeah.
Yeah, little shells that look like a miniature ICBM.
Little ICBM. Hey, listen, folks. I'm gonna put it straight across the nation, across the world. These people are cowards. And the guys, I couldn't believe the picture I saw from Florida, from down there where they got them Nazis marching in the street.
Yeah.
Anybody that stands against them, anybody that stands up to them, has these guys armor on them.
Yeah, body armor, riot gear.
No, you see them. You see them for what they are. Nazis being led by Nazis in armor, right?
It kind of looked that way to me, Bob. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that riot squad was there to protect the Nazis against the people that would like to have done something about them when they marched through their neighborhood. I don't think Nazis are entitled to police protection, but, you know, that's me and I'm crazy.
I don't either, Bob. Bob, I don't believe that any Nazi... I mean, I grew up... I mean, I was born right at the pinnacle, the end of that period in this country where people sacrificed. I mean, they had tin can drives. People would give up their pots and pans, and even Agnes would have to give up her skillet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And bandage rolling. And yeah.
Fight the Nazis, right?
Right. As far as I'm concerned, Nazis are made for stomping.
Okay. Then it's time we start stomping back. We've been sitting on our laurels, son.
Well, that's the sad thing. In that march down in Florida, if any of those African Americans had come off the porch and attacked those Nazis, those cops would have beat the snot out of them.
308.
No. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I'll guarantee you, when the Nazis come to stomp some of this black boy, because I earned my soul.
Yeah.
I earned it in a place that I can't describe. I cannot put it in words. I just know that I am part, and I am part and parcel, and a piece of what they did in the Ninth Ward. My friends, my soulmates, my people died there, not yours.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And your people died in those mines, but not your people, my people. My people. Not from France, not from Germany, not from anywhere else, but from the good old U.S. of A. And it's not that thing that they keep waving in your face. It's not that flag. The flag is not the nation. The people of this nation are that.
Yeah.
That thing.
Yeah, the body politic. The Romans, when they created... Yeah, the Romans, when they created the word republic, it comes from res publica, and they couldn't even define what it is they were trying to create, because res publica just turns out to mean public thing.
Yes, a public thing.
I mean, it kind of defies definition. But
no, I'm gonna. I know
what you're talking about.
We're getting to a point, but I want to say to Andrew in New York, okay, I love you. I care about you. I want you to get a 308 or a, what did you say you had?
300 Winchester mag.
Well, hey, the mag ain't going to be good enough because you're bolting it in there. You need to slam it at them. Hey, and
that,
when you get your 308, make sure you got armor-piercing rounds that you can slam at them, because they'll go through all that stuff. I mean, I guarantee you, you shoot at them, and it'll go through the
With Bush going to India, Bob, I try real hard to channel my Gandhi instincts and nonviolence.
But
you
want nonviolence, but they want violence, and the only thing that's going to stop them is if you bring it to them. Don't stop. Don't love them because they are not lovable. Okay, they got their lines from Rush Limbaugh, and they got their lines from everybody else. The thing is, bring it to them. If they want blood, give them blood. And I said it twice, and it's not a good word because you can't say it on the air. They don't like the word. They won't talk about how much they have shed in their quest to conquer the earth, okay?
Yeah. I
love my family. I love your family.
These fascists that you're talking about, Bob, what it comes down to, if it's not moving, they steal it, and if it is, they kill it.
Okay.
I mean, that's what it boils down to. But we got to roll on. We got folks waiting. Thank you so much, Bob. You take care and have yourself a great evening. Look forward to hearing from you again. All right.
I made a mistake.
No, you didn't make a mistake. I just got to get the next caller.
I know.
Okay, take it easy, Bob. See you now.
All right. Hey, thank you much.
Oh, my pleasure. Bye now.
Good. Hey, I love you.
Love you too, man.
I love you, Agnes, and I love your children. I love all my brothers and sisters. But they got to realize that this earth belongs to the people and not to the sheeple. The sheeple are asleep, and I'm sorry for them.
Well, the sheeple have been asleep through centuries and centuries. That much is true. We learned that much listening to Jeff Biggers last night talking about the Battle of Kings Mountain. But we got to hit it. We got to get to the next caller because I'm backed up to the wall, Bob. You take care now.
Good night.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And let's see, Peter in Tallahassee. Hey, Peter, you're head on.
Head on? Oh, I must have missed out. I was calling for Off With Their Heads Radio.
No.
I love you guys. You know, Bob is absolutely right. This stuff about the flag is not the people. It's not the union. It's the, we the people. And it's even worse than that. They think it's the presidency, that it's the president himself is the country. I'll give you a little example. A couple of months ago, I burned a bunch of, maybe 15 or 20 copies of Taking My Country Back. And most everybody probably knows that. It's Tony Stampley sang it. It's a country and western song, very, very progressive.
Mm-hmm.
I took him down to the church, and I left him down there with a little sign on a table that said, "Great new country song, free, take one." And it only took about five days. The preacher called me. And he said, "What's going on?" He said, "There were some people that were complaining that this song was not very patriotic." And, that is the nature of the disease.
Oh, I know.
What the song actually is the height of patriotism is to question these. Well, Lord, Peter, I don't want to say it. Hey, you just question these people. That's what is not patriotic is to just sit back and remain silent. They just don't get it.
Yeah, sit back and wait to get screwed. There's not 10 cents worth of anything that we were listening to last night from Jeff Biggers. When we didn't really get into it, but the story of the Battle of Kings Mountain, Peter, my God, that was literally a bunch of moonshine swilling mountaineers marching across and I'm not denigrating anybody because with the moonshine reference either.
Oh, I realize, yeah.
But marching across some of the roughest territory on the east coast of the United States, 100 cotton-picking miles to stop. And again, this one needs to be brought home because what Bob said is very true, that that there are a bunch of sheeple. The people that were the British leader at Kings Mountain was a guy named Ferguson. And he was the only honest-to-God person from the UK, or what was then England or Great Britain, that was at that battle. The rest of them were colonists.
Yeah.
At Kings Mountain, the revolution's back was almost broken by a group of conservative really, ultra-conservative, Tory, loyalist, don't question the authority types under the leadership of a British officer.
Yeah.
And it took a bunch of hard-assed mountaineers going across 100 miles of just god-awful terrain to stop them in their tracks at Kings Mountain.
Well, there's another thing that Bob was absolutely right about, too, about these being basically evil at heart. These people don't want peace. I want to give you a little snapshot of my day. This morning, I looked into the heart of the disease, and it was not a pretty thing to see. This morning, I was standing in line at the post office in Tallahassee, and I'll paint a little picture for you. It wasn't very crowded today. There's only about 8 people in line, and at the end of the line, mounted up on the wall, there's a television set carefully pointed toward the people in line who are waiting for the windows, tuned to Fox News. Well, at the head of the line, there was this individual who was staring up with rapt attention to the little 19-inch color images that were flashing by, and Fox was carrying the story of what's going on in Iraq and the uprising and the fighting so this evil looking little trollish man with suspenders and a pot belly, if you looked up the word troll in the dictionary, his picture would be there, suddenly whirled around and faced the people who were in line, and he said to all of us, and I wrote this down when I got out to the car, I wrote it down word for word, he said, "We don't need to kill them Iraqis. They killing themselves. I wish they kill them all." Oh, my God.
That's the damnedest reason for bringing the troops home I think I've yet heard, Peter.
Oh, Jesus. Well, everyone in line was a little bit horrified by this appearance in front of us. And, anyway, in unison, everyone in the line turned and looked the other way. I mean, we all physically turned away.
Everybody started whistling, yodeling. Yeah, I think I hear my mom.
You know, there was a time when I think the man would have gotten some support from, you know, any random group of people. But times are changing. But he was really the epitome, the very heart of the disease.
Well, but, you know, and the thing is, what you're seeing there is the long-term 40-year metastasis of a cancer that's been running around in this country. Because I remember hearing good old Southern boys as I was growing up saying, "You know, them Vietnamese been killing them Vietnamese each other for 1,000 years.
Yeah.
What are we doing over there?"
Yep.
And it's halfway an anti-war message, but it's coming from the wrong brain cell.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. What did it say, Sebastian? That man, where'd you hear that in church? They killing themselves. We don't need to kill them Iraqis. Dear God, it was the heart of darkness. Oh, horrifying.
And then I saw Colonel Kurtz.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
You talk about giving those discs away. I talk about being such a child of my media upbringing in the early days of television. You giving away those free discs reminded me of Michigan J. Frog and the old, you know, remember Michigan J. Frog? Admission, $1, admission, 50 cents, free beer!
I was trying to slip copies in the right hands, and I did it, you know, because it upset somebody. That's exactly why I wanted to do it.
Well, maybe next time what you do is you edit it yourself before you burn it, and you put 2 or 3 bars of Lee Greenwood singing, "I'm proud to be an American. God bless the USA." That's
oh,
it. You know, because the, I mean, you know, the fundy churchers will line up and pay twice the ticket price to go hear Lee Greenwood sing "God Bless the USA."
Yes, they will.
So you hang about 8 bars of that in front of it, and then you let the song kick in.
Oh, that's so good, Bob. I'll re-edit. It's so wonderful. Thank
and they'll
so
be
much.
Pre-anesthetized.
Yeah. Yeah, they wouldn't wake up out of the coma before it was too late. They'd be like when you scratch a dog's belly and their leg goes really, really fast.
Right, you know, the little fundies would stand up and put their hands over their heart, and the next thing you know, they're listening to The Subversion.
I love it. Oh, that's all I had, Bob. I just had this snapshot, this image in my mind all day, and all day I've said to myself, "I'm going to tell them what that man said. I'm going to tell them."
Oh,
I'll write
it
down.
It is just, I mean, you know, and you're down south. I mean, North Florida is a different place from South Florida.
Oh, very, very. North Florida is just an extension of South Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, you're in Redneckville.
Oh, truly.
And I say that with all the love in my heart because I are one, too. But
yep,
every
those Georgia red clay hills, they extend all the way to the beach in North Florida.
Yeah, and the thing, every now and then you just sort of pull the curtain back and, you know, there's the dude standing around the still. And
I know it. It was this God himself put him there to scare the hell out of me. I'm thinking, Jesus, don't make me go there.
The things that God does to help you. I mean, can you imagine being that poor troll?
Oh, it was just major. Oh, my God. Well, I never. I thought I'd see it all till I saw that.
And the sad thing is, he's probably got a family, and he's raising a little feller that thinks just like him.
Yep, that's the tragedy of it. That certainly is. Just staring up at that little 19-inch color TV.
Were there suspenders involved?
Yes!
Yeah, okay. I thought I heard you, yeah.
He was horrified.
Yeah,
he was all wrinkled and fat, and you know he had the troop sticker on the damn whatever it was.
It was a sharp.
And if you followed him home, the Christmas lights are still up.
No, Jesus. Yeah. Oh, God.
Shame on me. I'm being an elitist again. I hate me when I do that.
Just don't make me get into Mac again tonight. I was so busted when I got back to the chat room. I'm Microsoft elitist, and you know, and I did a nasty, and I did something bad the other night. I had to pay.
Oh, there is no God but guilt. Bill Gates and Microsoft is his prophet. Peter, you take it easy. Thanks so much, brother.
Thank you, Bob. Good night.
Bye now.
Bye, Agnes.
Bye.
Oh, well, let's end this hour on a laugh. All right, lines are open. It's taken some work, but we've gotten through them. If you've got more to say, bring it on. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. See how much fun it is to be a liberal? Yes, it is. This is Head On. I'm Bob.
Couldn't dream how hard I got it. Stay out of my shoes. If you know. Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Okay, let's hit a few things. By the way, I'm Bob Kincaid. Thanks to everybody participating in the Tom Hartman chat room. Tom, you know, Tom's on tonight, too. He's filling in for Sam Cedar at Air America because Sam's filling in for Al Franken. Sam sounds very good on the Al Franken show, by the way. At any rate, or could it be they're grooming him for when Al runs for Senate? One never knows. It'd be a nice fit, though. Truly, it would. Now, as you know, yesterday, and see, let's see, how do we approach this? I get frustrated because I feel sometimes like I'm being deliberately driven, absolutely sprayed roach crazy by the machinations of this administration. My paranoia factor is running absolutely through the roof right now. Ever since last night, with the breaking news about the videotape that the media wouldn't watch for 6 months. And it just happens to happen at the same time that dear leader is flying to India to do a little business on behalf of his buddies in the nuclear industry. Now, here we are, 2 hours into this Thursday night edition of Head On, and does anybody in America know that George Bush is in India? Does anybody care? Yeah, we know. I kind of halfway expected Mohandas K. Gandhi, the Mahatma, the great soul, I kind of expected his ashes to reconstitute themselves when dear leader went to or I don't know, did he go yet? He was said to be going to Gandhi's shrine, and I kind of expected Gandhi to reconstitute himself out of his ashes or come up in his present incarnation because can you imagine I read a news story this morning and I didn't print it, shame on me, from NBC News that had a quote from dear leader about, I will go to India and I will bring nuclear power. Something very close along those lines. And you know, I'm a little punchy at 7:30 in the morning. I'm a lot punchy at 7:30. And I am not responsible for my own actions at 7:30 in the morning. And so I read that, and I will go to India and I will bring safe nuclear power. And the first thing, they were making it sound like he was Gandhi going to the sea to make salt. It got all over me. And it turns out, you know, back up, Bob. I've told you that I've been in just network hell for the last 2 or 3 days here at the studio. You know, every day we try to make things a little bit better. We make the show a little bit better. We make things run a little smoother, we hope, in anticipation of that great day that's a-coming when this thing is just going to, well, we're already growing at almost an exponential rate. So last night after the program, I was having some trouble with a router. And I got on customer support for the company, and my phone call was taken through to somewhere in India. And I spoke to the most lovely human being. Her name was Isha. And I'm sure it has something to do with company policy, but I like also to think it has something to do with knowing how to treat another human being. It was, good evening, Mr. Kincaid, sir. May I please? Yes, thank you. And it was a joyful experience. And I couldn't work my, you know, that's one of those offshore jobs. That's one of those outsourced jobs. But I was hard-pressed to take any kind of a negative position toward Isha because, A, she got done for me what I needed needed to get done, and you're listening to this program in a large part because of her efforts. And, B, how can I hate her for taking a job that some American corporation moved over there and offered to her? Because with what she makes, she will provide herself a home. She'll probably provide her parents a home. Look after them in their old age. And have a family that will look after her. And that American corporation that outsourced those jobs over there did so because they knew that Isha would take a lot less money. They didn't outsource the job because the American workers that were no good anymore. I don't care what Don Blankenship and his buddies at Massey say about the qualities of the Appalachian worker or the American worker overall. It wasn't that. The fact of the matter is, if they pay the worker a little bit less, then there's a hell of a lot more. They're not hiring more workers. They're not working them less hours in Mumbai or Delhi. What they're doing is they're padding their own pockets. They're making themselves richer. Yeah, it means something on the share price. Who holds most of those shares? Newsflash, it's not somebody with a mutual fund. The executives have the stock option deals. And so when they pay workers a little less, they pay themselves a little bit more. And there was just a weird sense of synchronicity in talking to someone on the Indian subcontinent at the same time that I knew that dear leader was over there shaming us and hustling nuclear technology to the world's largest democracy at the same time that he wouldn't insist that they sign on to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Because, you see, the only reason the Bush administration isn't pressing for India to sign on to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty is because they know that if they don't get in bed with India with their nuclear business buddies, that, you know, China will come in and help. Or Russia will come in and help. You know, this is out of The Godfather again. This is Abe Vigoda looking up and tell Michael, I always liked him. He's a nice boy. It was only business. So India still hasn't signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. And George has made himself a bed of thorns because taking that deal, you know, he hasn't even gone to Pakistan yet. George goes to India and takes this sweetheart deal that gives nuclear technology to India, or, you know, not give, sells, baby, sells. Who are we kidding here? Sells nuclear technology to the nation of India. And now he's going to Pakistan, and General Pervez Musharraf, a brutal dictator, I might add, is saying, you know, we would like to have the same deal, Mr. George. Remember, we are your partner in the war on terror. But Pakistan is, of course, also the Walmart of black market nuclear technology. AQ Khan, anyone? They've provided nuclear technology to Iran. They've provided nuclear technology to North Korea. And it was even said at one point that they provided nuclear technology to Saddam Hussein, a brutal dictator. And so it was just a weird little nexus for me at 7:30. You know, I don't do the coffee thing anymore, so I don't get that immediate jolt of waking up. So then, having read this news account about Dear Leader's trip there, I found a montage of news reports about Dear Leader's arrival in India. Agnes, can you find that there? Can you find that there? Can you find that there montage of news reports? Bush, India reacts.
Natalie, good day to you. Well, you're right. The president is in India now. Consider the time difference, and it's in the middle of the night now, really, over there. So his official 2 days of meetings and visits in India really don't get underway until Thursday. And, of course, he has a stop planned in Pakistan as well over the weekend. Now, in India, though, today, tens of thousands protested the president's visit. Some, of course, oppose the war in Iraq. Others say they're concerned that India is going to let the United States call too many shots in what is a warming relationship.
President Bush made a surprise stop today in Afghanistan before moving on to India. The official welcomes were warm, not so on the unofficial welcome in the Indian capital. Tens of thousands, mostly Muslims, exercised their democratic rights by taking to the streets before Mr. Bush's arrival. Many shouted death to Bush and bully Bush, go home. Similar protests were held in other cities.
Thousands of Muslims and communist members of opposition parties protesting in the streets of the capital before Mr. Bush's arrival. Some of these protesters chanted death to Bush and waved signs calling on the U.S. calling the
they
U.S.
didn't
president
say that, did they?
A terrorist.
That's illegal.
Tens of thousands of people gathered in New Delhi today to protest a visit by President Bush to India. A police spokesperson said the crowd exceeded 100,000 people. This is Abdul Hussein, a spokesperson for one of the protests.
Welcoming a person like him is like welcoming a murderer, and he has become a militant and a warmonger. He is a war president. So welcoming a person like him does not make any sense or have any meaning in a country like India. And welcoming him in the country of the Mahatma will desecrate our land.
Amen, brother. Amen. I don't know what the word is in your language for amen, but amen. Welcoming a man like that in the land of the Mahatma is a desecration to India. Now, don't get in a hurry to get away from it, Agnes. We may need to hear some more of that again.
I'm right there.
Okay, thank you, dear. Did you happen to hear what... there's some great protest coming out of this visit. 100,000 people showed up just because George Bush showed up to tell him to go the hell home! Why can't 100,000, why can't 10 times 100,000 Americans show up in Washington, D.C. to demand that he exit our house? And, of course, India is the largest democracy in the world. And, as the right-wing nuts will be fond of reminding you,
well, America ain't no democracy. It's a republic founded on principles of democracy. But it is really a republic. It ain't no democracy. There ain't no democracy in the Constitution.
Yeah, I know.
God.
You know, people... What do I? Am I convinced that the ignorant wrong wing in America is comprised entirely of the sons, daughters, grandsons, and granddaughters of Ernest T. Bass? Yes, I am. But they have things in India like free speech, because you'll notice that in India they were allowed to say, and I am quoting here, Agent Fred. This is a quote. They said, death to Bush. We in America do not have free speech. We can't say something like that and mean it. Of course, you know, in India, and I'm not making fun of it. No, I'm really not. In India, death to anybody means a little something different. In India, death to Bush means, all right, you miserable little sack of, it's time for you to shuffle off this mortal coil. You've screwed this life up. Let's see if you can come back again as a maggot and get that right. So, you know, it doesn't really mean the same. But 100,000 people showed, because, now, you know what you didn't get from the liberal media in those reports?
Yes, Bill, that's right. There were tens of thousands of protesters who showed up to protest the arrival of George W. Bush.
Did you notice what you didn't hear? And it's what you don't hear that matters. There's as much music between the notes as in them themselves. What you did not hear was,
"Well, Bill, tens of thousands of Indians showed up in a joyous welcome to American President George W. Bush,"
because they didn't. They didn't report it because it didn't happen. There were no joyous crowds flinging flowers at George W. Bush's feet. There were no barefoot peasants walking 60 miles to see George W. Bush the way they used to do in Africa to see Bill Clinton because he represented hope in the world. George W. Bush came to India to bring the power of the atom. George W. Bush supplanted himself in the Bhagavad Gita where it says, "Lo, I am become death, the destroyer of worlds." That is the role that George W. Bush is playing in his little visit to the Indian subcontinent. And it is nothing to make us proud. Did you hear in that soundbite the roar of the crowd, the roar of displeasure, demanding that George W. Bush leave their pleasant, happy home the hell alone? Because you gotta understand, where George Bush goes, death follows fast. And so, at some point, he will visit Gandhi's shrine. And, frankly, how the Indian people can countenance that, I do not know. Though Gandhi himself would preach nonviolence. I don't know. Even Gandhi. Dealing with the likes of a George W. Bush. I don't know if a Gandhi or an MLK could exist in the world today. Honest to God, I don't know if Gandhi or MLK could exist in the world today. The Palestinians are desperately in need of a Gandhi. The Israelis are desperately in need of a Gandhi. God knows the poor, bleeding Iraqis are desperately in need of a Gandhi. And while we're at it, oh Lord in heaven, the United States of America is desperately in need of an MLK or a Gandhi. Someone has got to stop the bleeding. Someone has got to put paid to the murder. It's still murder in Iraq. And although you watch, you know, I can't look at the news on TV. I can't take it seriously anymore. I'm sorry. Honest to God, I can't. I look at it, and this morning, you know, with the cup of meaningless decaf sitting there looking at the tube and the talk about Bush going to India and all of that happy crap, I'm looking and I'm sitting there and I'm at CNN and I'm thinking, did you doofuses, see Latin, doofuses, plural, did you doofy get the videotape? From that was distributed the day after Dear Leaders meeting. 6 months ago, CNN. 6 months ago, Solenoid O'Brien. Did anybody say, honey, we got an interesting little videotape here? Nah, she was down. Oh, you know, you can. Well, I forget if it was Crooks and Lions. No, it was at Bradlog. It was Bradlog.com, our good friend Brad Friedman. There was video show of Solenoid O'Brien broadcasting live from the most important Mardi Gras in world history, showing off her Mardi Bra. If I'm lying, I'm dying.
Lost the weight from the twins,
then. What? And saying that they should give their Mardi Bra to Miles O'Brien. I'm not kidding. So she didn't see the videotape until somebody brought it to her and explained it to her. This is the FEMA meeting, Solenoid. This is where dear we haven't even gotten around to dear leader's response to all of this. Now remember, at the top of the program we played the National Weather Service guy saying, you know, this is a lot like Hurricane Andrew, except Hurricane Andrew looks like a tempest in a teapot compared to Katrina, and this one's going to be a booger. And you got Michael Brown saying that this is the big one, boys, and we don't even know how to deal with the dead, and we are going to be up to our necks in dead because the roof at the Superdome can't even stand up to a Cat 5 hurricane. Turns out it couldn't stand up to a Cat 4 either. And you got the other FEMA guy saying, no, there's a definite chance the levees are going to go. Now, off in Crawford, Texas, there's a situation room. And they've got it apparently hooked up with some of the most god-awful audio and video equipment that is purchasable by the federal government. Because the video was bad and the audio is worse. But this is all there is to it. I mean, it's not like this is some clip of a tape that I just took out a little bit of dear leader to make him look bad. This is all he had to say. The guy is sitting there saying, Mr. President, this is going to be the big one. And another guy is saying, this thing makes Andrew look like nothing. This thing's going to bang into the, and it's going to be hell's a popping. And another dude saying the levees may go. And here is how George Bush responds.
I want to assure the folks at the state level that we are fully prepared to not only help you during the storm, but we will move in whatever resources and assets we have at our disposal after the storm to help you deal with the loss of property, and we pray for no loss of life, of course.
What gets mentioned first? The losses. What gets mentioned first? Yeah, we hope there's not going to be any loss of property, and hopefully none of those dark skinned people will die either. Property was mentioned before people. Jesus, I hate him. Property was mentioned before people. Now, I don't want any sympathy or anything, but I got this done to me at 7:30 this morning. And the whole damn day has been affected by that. And I've been sitting around thinking, yeah, I got to talk about this. I don't know how to express this. We're going to be there to help you prevent loss of property, and we hope, we pray, no loss of life. Oh, hell, let's take a break. Now, this is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Yes. Just wanted to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right?
Yes.
He died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones were stolen. Apparently, there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently, now he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, I just thought it was so. I thought it was so ghoulish.
It just freaks me out. Anyway.
Hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
The Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I have watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, you know, get a backbone, for God's sake. You know, stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything, you know, anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, this is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, you know, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Don't you know that talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper? Don't you know talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper? While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Who are people gonna rise up and get their share? Who are people gonna rise up and take what's there? Don't you know you better run, run, run.
Okay, 26 minutes before the hour, downhill to the end. But let's a little bit of email here from our good friend Larry. A copy of the letter to the editor that he sent. Larry's from Canonsburg, Pennsylvania. A little community dear to my heart. He writes, "Dear President Bush, as an American who loves his country, I write to you with urgency. I've sat back and watched our national deficit soar to heights never imagined. Our country now borrows money from the Chinese so that we may purchase their goods. The Chinese and the Saudis hold so many American dollars that they could sink our economy on a whim. If OPEC converts to the euro, all heck would break loose. Our manufacturing capabilities are dwindling, and jobs are being outsourced so rapidly that one can hear a whooshing sound. The average American worker works harder and for less. The wealthy, who don't really need help to put food on the table, have been given every break possible. The jobs you claim are being produced are low-wage service jobs with no future. The middle and lower classes have achieved nothing. The wealthy should have their tax breaks rescinded and the money shifted to the lower classes. No chance of that. It's all trickle-down economics. Enrich the rich and the crumbs will filter down. Really? You have lied us into a war that you wanted to fight years before you became president. American men and women, in addition to countless Iraqis, have been killed by American firepower. The only guarantee is the existence of an Islamic theocracy when we depart. You constantly try to Americanize Arab cultures, not understanding their tribal nature. Your family's business dealings with global oil giants have endangered the United States by subjecting us to tyrannical regimes and associations with unsavory people. Because of your oily friendships and business deals, America's chance for energy independence is dead in the water. Now you want to sell American ports to people that you and or your minions have extensive business deals with. Everything seems to be a business deal with you. Every action you have taken seems to grease the portfolio of companies intimately involved with you or your administration. Money, money, and more money. You claimed that you had no idea that the levees in New Orleans would breach, yet in recent videos it's clear that your disaster team knew very well that the levee would be in grave jeopardy. The people of New Orleans were injured or killed, perhaps to a greater degree than necessary. Hopefully there was no conscious effort to change the voter demographic in that area. We have bridges falling on our heads, poor roads, no universal health care. Schools are crumbling, teachers and nurses don't make near enough money, working people are on the run, and some of the few protections they have, like labor unions, are in mortal danger. If you had your way, unions would be outlawed and workers would be subject to the compassionate market forces. Soon we will all be serfs working for the global corporate monster that will take care of you in retirement. The Pentagon budget is so huge that it amounts to more money than the rest of the world spends combined on its defense. Military spending is out of control. We need some of that money for real people stuff. You're now in India, not giving advice or spreading good cheer, but selling fighter planes and nuclear material. How India or any other country qualifies for the nuclear two-cheek kiss is beyond me. You've stripped me of some of my liberties. You take it upon yourself to spy on Americans at your whim. You never speak in front of tough audiences, but confine your appearances to military institutions and kindergartens. How? Kindergartens. The real president, Mr. Cheney, hides and skulks around virtually hidden from the American public. Your conservative credentials are in doubt as fiscal responsibility has been thrown out the window. You've turned my country into a fearful, mean, imperialistic empire. Every left-leaning government that wants to help its people is in danger of extermination. You operate in complete secrecy. That may be acceptable for authoritarian dictatorships, but not for America. You've squandered the goodwill of the planet after 9/11. Now we're reviled in many quarters due to your belligerent and hectoring attitude towards foreign governments. It will take years to restore the image of the United States. For these reasons, I ask you to do the honorable thing and resign immediately. That would result in the real power taking power, but it is a necessary evil. Please take my advice. I am sincerely yours. Our friend Larry. Powerful stuff. Send it. And send it to your friends. That's a hell of a manifesto. Let's go to the phones. Wayne is with us. Hey, Wayne, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good. You?
Good, man. I've missed most of the show, but, you know.
Meeting tonight?
Yeah, I'm trying to start a revolution.
Well, you're going to miss the show once in a while when you're out there being a revolutionary.
That takes up a lot of time.
It does, it does.
It's, well, it's getting exciting. I mean, all that letter you just wrote. Now, where'd that come from?
That's our buddy Larry in Cannonsburg, PA.
And where could one see a copy of that?
I can forward it to you.
That would be good.
Okay.
That would be good. That's
I'm sure Larry won't mind.
Okay. I didn't get to hear it all. I don't know. It was like you were like real low in the background.
It's an indictment. This isn't a letter. This is an indictment, Wayne.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, hell, I'll sign it. I mean, yeah. I don't care. It's been a pretty good week, I think, so far. I mean, with everything that's been going on.
If we could just get him to stay in India, it'd be a beautiful week.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he's got to go somewhere where his ratings are higher, you know. And
yeah.
That's not very many places.
Yeah, that's like, they talk about what Bush's ratings have dropped to. Have you seen Cheney's?
Yeah, well, I mean, 18's last I saw. Did he go lower than that?
No, 18, but not percent, people.
What's that?
Not 18%, it's 18 people.
Oh, okay. Hell, I wouldn't think it was that.
It's like his wife and grandkids. That's the last
I think
bit.
They're exaggerating. And I don't mean...
Yeah, and I'm stealing, too, because that was Leno's line.
Right. Ah, God. But, you know, I always try to keep in mind, and I tell people, you know, like, I mean, it's just really coming out how these people absolutely cannot tell the truth about anything.
No.
I mean, nothing, you know. And always, you know, I mean, one of my really defining moments was they couldn't even tell the truth about Pat Tillman's death.
Yeah, right.
Or who's our, I can't think of her name. Jessica Lynch.
Jessica Lynch.
you know, the story they made up about her.
Oh, yeah, raped by 19 gorilla-sized Iraqis.
Oh, yeah, and fired her guns till she ran out of ammunition and
you know. No, she was Alvin York.
I know. Ah, oh, God. And I mean, now, when somebody can't tell you the truth about how a hero died, how the hell can you trust anything? And I don't. I mean, like, the unemployment numbers and how could anybody have any confidence whatsoever in anything they say?
Well, I mean, A, you know it's dummied up. And B, I mean, Wayne, you follow these kind of things. You know, it's 3.4%. This month's account of last month's numbers is 3.4%. But wait till next month when it goes to 5.2.
Right.
Because it'll be revised.
Well, and then I always thought, yeah, they come in with them revisions. Oh, yeah. Oh, we're wrong. Hell, it's even better than we thought.
No, it's a clarification.
Look how happy you are. You know.
You love flipping those burgers and getting that hot splatter and grease on you, pulling them fries out of the... Yeah.
Right. God.
You know, someday I'm going to get in trouble for that because it makes it sound like I have disrespect for people who work in the food industry, and God knows that's the last thing in the world.
Listen, we all know, and it's been said on this show many times, and I'll say it again, all work is honorable.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's all you need to understand. You know, and I hold anybody that's willing to work and work hard in high regard. I don't give a damn what you do.
Yeah.
Nah, that's, you know. Oh, hey, did you see West Virginia prevailing wage, minimum wage has passed the House and now going to the Senate?
No kidding.
Yeah, I mean, that's good, man.
Well, that's great, but is it just in time to make sure it doesn't clear the Senate?
I don't believe so.
Is there still time?
I don't believe so. Yes. Yes, there is. Yes, there is. So we'll see what they do over there, and you know.
Well, I mean, I don't want to throw water on anybody's parade or anything.
I'm not going to let you throw water.
We are talking about the West Virginia Senate, Wayne. I mean, unless West Virginia, who's behind it?
Magic Joe, man.
That's right.
Now you know.
Magic Joe Manchin.
Yeah. Do you realize he's the most popular governor?
Yeah, in the country, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't, call him up.
He'll tell you.
I mean, I don't.
Oh, you got a million of them. No, I'm sorry. I'm a little bit of a skeptic because unless West Virginians for life tells the Senate to do something, they ain't gonna.
Well, listen, you have every right to be, but you know, I mean, I have to be optimistic. I work, you know, I want people to call your senators, tell them this is a good thing, blah blah blah.
Yeah,
and, you know.
And, you know, we could step out there and be part...
Hey, we've surprised people before. Remember the roadkill bill?
God.
You know.
The tongue-splitting bill?
There you go. Oh, yeah, that one. I forgot about that one. That was really high on my list.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't had any tongue-splitting bills this year that I've caught, so, you know, I mean...
I know. Well, it's election. You know?
Yeah.
Election. Of course,
yeah, and they want
Love did manage to lower the tax on timber. For the little timber operator.
Yeah, because God knows that was needed. And,
yeah, right.
Do
you know any little timber operator?
No, and I don't know any little timber either.
No.
Jeez.
But listen, I mean, if anybody's listening, I mean, I don't care if you don't live in West Virginia. If you got relatives here, tell them, call their senators and tell them let's pass.
Yeah,
this,
you know, I'll call Shirley Love's office, and I happen to have another guy who's a good senator.
Oh, you know who they're saying to call?
Who?
Our good friend. I think you know him, Mike Oliverio.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that snake.
Oh, brother.
I mean, well, I think he's a snake.
He's my classmate, Wayne.
That's your problem, Bob. You know, I don't know what the hell I could do about that.
Oh,
that's your problem.
So is he?
You ought to have more influence with him than the ordinary person.
Oh God!
You're
helping.
Your assignment.
Yeah, you're not helping again.
I'm going to call him tomorrow and find out if you call him.
Oh God! But now, let me get—he's opposed to it.
Oh, he would really like some calls of support, which you know, so he could say he's leaning that way, you know.
He's looking for cover, in other words.
Said, yeah, you got it. You know all about politics.
Sure, and I know.
You know,
I know.
I was really considering voting for that, but I didn't get enough calls. And actually, when I weighed it right out, there were more calls against it than.
Well, while we're at it, do we need to send it in faxed, handwritten on stuff with gravy stains and coffee circles?
It's
you know, like, yeah, like Senator Byrd. It's got to have a couple of gravy stains and maybe one of those little coffee cup circles.
Oh, yeah. Well, oh, that's right. Exactly. Handwritten. Got through them anthrax detectors instant.
Right.
Yeah, that was, well, Must have been them coffee stains. And every letter had the same sentence in it too, and he found that amazing.
God.
What do you?
But that is interesting though. It was mentioned earlier, of course, our good friend Fritz from New Mexico mentioned that, of course, Byrd did vote against the Patriot Act today. Or yesterday was, maybe. Voted against the Patriot Act with 9 other brave senators. But I'll tell you what I found fascinating. The Patriot Act passed anyway. And you know what part
of
that...
What was the compromise? Supposedly there was a compromise.
Yeah, it was. Let us pass the Patriot Act, and we won't put you in one of the new dog cages.
Right. And all the Democrats go, "Oh, wow, what a deal!"
Yeah, we'll take that twice.
All right.
Yeah, but here's one of the fun parts of the new Patriot Act, Wayne. our buddy Gene out in Oregon sent this along my way. It turns out that under the Patriot Act, if you pay off your credit card too fast, you get reported.
You get what?
You get reported.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not kidding. This is a story from the Providence Journal about a guy named Walter Senge, retired Texas school teacher, moved to Rhode Island.
How much was his bill?
They paid down some debt. The balance on their JCPenney Platinum MasterCard had gotten to an unhealthy level, so they sent in a large payment of $6,522. And they got investigated for it.
Oh, my God.
I mean, what, did the government figure that with that kind of money they were dealing in nuclear arms or something?
They were told as they moved up the managerial ladder at the call center that the amount they had sent in was much larger than their normal monthly payment, and if the increase hits a certain percentage higher than the normal payment, Homeland Security has to be notified. And the money does not move until the threat alert is lifted.
That's so they can eat it up in interest.
Oh, so he didn't even get to pay off his bill.
No, it just sat there, and, the card just sat there and racked interest, and, they got reported for not paying their bill.
Isn't that amazing? Oh, my gosh.
Thank you, 90 other worthless, good-for-nothing, why are you just drawing your breath in your pay, United States senators? Thank you.
Bro.
And
a lot of changes to make. I don't know, man, but...
Well, we got, that Patriot Act vote, again, though, Wayne, that shows us that we got a bunch of cowards. Democrats, cowards.
Yeah, it does. Well, exactly. That's,
It was Jeffords, it was Leahy, it was Byrd, it was Jeff Bingaman, as Fritz noted. Feingold.
Where was my good buddy Barack?
Barack Obama kind of voted for the Patriot Act.
He kind of did.
Yeah.
God, what a disappointment.
Well, he just wants to live. if he gets out and starts getting his MLK on, he is one dead black man.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be facetious. I think it's true.
Well, I think that, there's probably some validity to that. That's why Rockefeller writes letters and hides them in the drawer and shit.
Yeah, well, Agnes already turned off the magic button.
Okay.
That one went out, but thank God it's only the internet.
Well, I apologize.
That's okay.
Cockeyes.
Well, anybody who has not heard that word needs to call me immediately, and we'll have a little chat.
Okay. But anyway,
Rockefeller voted for, didn't he? Yeah, I think he did. Homeland Security. Arlen Specter voted for Homeland Security. That liberal Republican Lincoln Chafee, Homeland Security. Those liberal Republican senators from Maine, Olympia Snowe and Susan Collins, voted for the Homeland Security bill. And, of course, Rick Santorum, oh, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah, right.
Hillary?
Did Hillary vote for it?
I didn't. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but in that list that Fritz read off to me, I didn't think I heard Hillary's name. Hey, chat room, did Hillary vote against it? See, I've had so much stuff going on here, I didn't have the list I would ordinarily have had. But yeah, look. It's not. What's his name? That Nelson from Nebraska voted for it.
Oh well, he's a kook anyway, ain't he?
Yeah, well, and the Democrat senators from Arkansas.
Yeah. Didn't that Nelson guy was one of the guys that everybody was hammering to try to get to the...
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, the filibuster.
They disappoint me. They break my heart. You know, I mean, they and it's not, it's like they're breaking a child's heart, because it's the stuff I learned about loving my country at the knee of my World War II veteran father that they're destroying for me. That's what they're breaking.
Oh, hey, I know where you're coming from, man. But, you know, the only, you know, I mean, we just got to, we're stuck with what we got right at this particular minute. There's a good chance, you know, here I go with my wild dreams and stuff.
Yeah, well, okay.
I still believe there's a chance to take the Senate. If we could do that, if we could take the House, if we could take one body or the other, and sometimes I think the House would be better because that's where impeachment starts, you know.
Yeah.
And more investigations. And they need to be emboldened. If, you know, if we could take over one part, you know, the House or the Senate, I think it will embolden the other body.
And yeah, just to confirm, Wayne, Hillary voted in favor of the Patriot Act.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. That doesn't surprise me.
Thanks. But, yeah, thanks to Zappa in the chat room.
Yeah.
No, I understand what you're saying. You know, but the thing is, you talk about taking the Senate back. There's so many things to think about in conjunction with all of that, Wayne. If we take the Senate back and Russ Feingold is not majority leader, there's no sense in taking the Senate back, because nobody else has any backbone to stand up to the thugs.
Well, that's exactly right. But see, that's where, number one, in order for us to take the Senate back, we have to be very involved. The people.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, once you get involved and we get that done, then we could tell them, okay, now here's going to be the majority leader, period.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what else to do, buddy.
I know. I'm not preaching give-up-ism.
I know you're not.
I'm just, you know, trying to...
But can you try to be a little more upbeat, for crying out loud? I mean, you're killing me here, you know?
You should have been here at the top of the last hour. We were laughing like little crazy people.
Oh, I wished I was. Yeah. I wished I was.
I sincerely hope that, you know, what you were talking about, that it would be a real feather in West Virginia's cap to be able to say that we are helping lead the nation into fair wages for, you know, for working people.
Well, I'm trying. How many other states have done that? 12, 13, something
like that? Yeah, I mean, it's certainly nowhere near a majority.
No, but I mean, you know, it'd be nice if we were in the first bunch here, because, and it's pretty significant. I think by June of 2008, it goes to 720.
Yeah.
By
2008, it will go to where it should have been in 2001.
Yeah, or something. Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly.
And a message from the chat room. You're being told that, Nanette writes, tell Wayne that we love him. I don't think he knows how much we all appreciate him. So, you know, there we go.
Oh, well, thank you. Listen, I got to tell you a story real quick.
Okay.
I committed a sin and I called another talk radio show. I tried to make a point. I know it's, useless, but you know me.
I always
think I could do something.
Headbanger.
So I was trying to get the guy to understand how the government made this deal where this prescription drug thing, we can't negotiate a bulk price for drugs. And that, so because of that, this Medicare prescription drug thing is probably costing somewhere between 4 to 6 times more than it should.
Right.
And, that was a bunch of baloney. So then a guy called, I don't know how many guys called in, I was a socialist, okay? That I was a socialist. But the last guy that called in, and you know him, he used to call your show.
Yeah.
Well, he called me a socialist and stuff. But then this other guy started talking about, well, we have to change the Promise scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to make it so that if you get that, that's the only scholarship. And this guy said, well, no, that's not good. You know, my son is, he's going to get the Promise Scholarship. He's going to get the Pell Grant. He's going to get this grant. He's going to get this grant. And that's only going to make up 85%, and I still got to make up the rest. Now, aren't those kind of socialist programs?
Yeah, they kind of are.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think when you get the Promise Scholarship, you have to learn to sing the International and get your Communist Party card.
Probably so. probably so.
Naughty, and, naughty. Don't call the other talk shows.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to stop that. But, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, being called a socialist coming from a fascist, I consider a compliment.
Yeah, wear that as a badge of honor.
There you go.
You know,
it wasn't all bad.
Yeah, I'd rather be, better me than thee, you know.
There
sure.
You go.
Exactly. All right, Wayne, thanks for calling, man. You have a great night, all right?
All right, brother. Have a good one.
Later. I'll try to be more upbeat next time.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye.
So we end on an upbeat night, or at least we try. The show tonight was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes, announced by Brian Reznor. Our engineer is Randy Kerbway. And our dear friend Ben Birch maintains the stream to this program, as well as the archives of this and many other fine liberal talk shows. He's got a fundraiser going on right now. Do the right thing, because Ben won't send you a bill. The program, of course, as we've mentioned a couple of times and try to mention frequently, is brought to you every blessed night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights, who are building the American dream. Let's try something, a different tack. They are rebuilding the American dream. And trying mighty hard. And always, always, always. RMR, it's all for you.